Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. I hope you're all doing well. I'm just catching up and getting a couple of podcasts out there. I've been quite focused on my BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, for the last little while. I had a competition at the weekend. It was quite daunting. Managed to do all right, but made some basic mistakes. Didn't get what I wanted in the end, but it's a bit of a learning process. Kind of a lot like what we do in recruitment. You know, you just have to keep on going, find the system that works, get the position that works, and yeah, do your best until you kind of dominate a certain area. Today's guest is Dara Everard. He's an old friend of mine. Actually, he's a really good friend of mine. He's the godfather to my first son, Connor, and I'm actually going out to see him in Barbados, where he's launched his second recruitment company. Him and his co-founders, the company's called Cantillon, and their slogan is a life less taxing. So he's going to be helping people move to financially advantageous locations like the Caymans and Bermuda and the Channel Islands and Dubai, mainly in the finance industry. So really proud of Dara doing this and, you know, almost moving from, well, from when I knew him, from being aspiring to be a manager in one of the big firms like Robert Walters, to taking a shot at a startup, to ultimately becoming the director of that office in Australia, to then going and launching the Irish business, to then doing an MBO to become a significant shareholder in the Irish business, to then getting backed again by his founder to get out to Barbados and do it again. And it's just, it's really great. So congratulations to Dara, to John Mansell, and to the man that kicked them all off, Niall Hamill. So, really good journey, really good story for anybody who wants to back themselves, go out there, really put in the time. You know, he's worked for that one company for a considerable amount of time. He had a vision. He knew he wanted to set up international offices. We've documented his story a couple of times in this podcast. And I think like the fruits of his labor are really coming home to show at the moment. So, it's really good. So hope you guys enjoy this. I'm going to enjoy being out in Barbados. I definitely need a holiday. It's going to be pretty exciting for him where he's going to have an office in that region, whether it's there. I think it might be there, or it might end up in Cayman. I'm not sure yet. But, you know, what an opportunity for the people who work for him in Dublin, that they can go, do you know what, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to work the Dublin market from Barbados, or I might work the region out there. He's got an excellent team in Dublin now, so they have the option to do that, to improve their income significantly, because if you move to Barbados, you can be tax-free on the welcome stamp. So, real inspirational story. Fair play to him. Hope you guys enjoy it. And remember, there's no one way to set up these recruitment businesses, and there's lots of interesting things that you can do with them. So I hope you guys enjoy. As ever, Dara is actually in our Scalable members group on WhatsApp called The Bridge. If you would like to get involved with any of our founder groups, we have our large, our Scalable, and our small one. Our small one is the Dinghy. That's for the people under five. We also have our mastermind program for the Dinghy, which is how to go through loads of different stuff. I've talked about it enough, but we've lots of founders that we're helping over a 6-month program. And then we do some advisory for the slightly more scalable firms as well, where Charlotte does much more detail point solutions on tech, automation, L&D, you name it. We go through it all. But if you've joined the podcast, you want to come on, want to be part of the community, give us a shout. I'm always available. Reach out to me on LinkedIn and I will get straight back to you. Have a great day. Take care and God bless.
I
Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. I'm joined today by Dara Everard from Airku and from Cantillon Search. Cantillon Search, is that right?
Yeah, CantillonSearch.com. Yeah, the company name is Cantillon, a life less taxing.
Okay, lovely. First podcast I've recorded where the guest is in Barbados. The last time we recorded, it was at the start of the pandemic, and you and I and everybody else didn't really know what was going to happen. Can you think of how your life has changed and how your business has changed since that conversation?
Yeah, it's exponentially changed. It's hard to fathom, actually, that we're at this point now as a business compared to where we were at 18 months ago. I think, to be honest, I wasn't even looking forward to this point because it was impossible. Like we discussed how we just thought about, okay, get through the next 3 months. And then we had to do that 6 times.
Yeah. It was really intense. So the Dublin market's recovering now. I think it's fair to say before the pandemic, you were quite a traditional recruitment business. In what ways did the pandemic shape your outlook of the business that you want to have now and scale?
Well, the remote working option or hybrid office working option is just something that's a standard now. That's not something that we really had in place. There may have been one person who maybe took advantage of it because it worked for her, but that's the big change. I think as well, the method in which we deal with clients is another huge one. It's just purely based on delivery now. You know, there's very few client meetings. It's just purely based on providing them with the right candidates. I think one of the major issues that we're facing at the moment is that it's much, much harder to move candidates in this market. Because a lot of the, like in Dublin, because a lot of the factors that would push people out of their job, like their commute, not getting on with their boss, you know, teammates they don't like, and all those factors aren't there. And then people are very concerned that, you know, they don't know what a new prospective employer might do with regards to bringing them back to the office or how they might remotely onboard them. So it's a case that the devil you know is better. So we've had to really sort of restructure how we find our candidates. We've hired a marketing specific person. We've invested in a few different online tools as well, just to try and focus on community building and then reaching out to them and then hoping that they reach back out to us.
Where did you find that marketing person?
I can't remember. I know she's good. The provider, not too sure about.
All right, cool.
That's actually been quite transformative, actually, having that, particularly for the new business, because the new business is going to have a real focus on presenting the opportunity to, it's capturing the audience, presenting the opportunity to the audience through social media, through videos, through online content, and then being seen as market experts that they would come to when they want to use what we offer.
Yeah, so I think what you've created is now like really cool, and there's loads of hard yards. So I know all the hard yards because I know you, and I know the different steps. So could you kind of walk us through your journey just quickly, like, because I worked with you 12 years ago in Robert Walters, 11 years ago, I don't know, a long time ago. You and a few others went and set up a startup, and then you progressed your career to, you were running the office there, and then you put up your hand and went back home. Walk us through that journey from going back home to how you build a structure to the point now where it's its own independent unit, and you're on the other side of the world managing the outcomes of that, but also about to run this gauntlet again. What do those steps look like? And I suppose I'm thinking more of these people who maybe they have they have 3 or 4 billers, or they're considering what type of business that they want to hire, they want to build, and it's super hard to get that exit these days. So how do you go about creating something like this?
So when I first came back, I knew that I had I knew that I had the blueprint from the business that I was working for. So I was working for the Anderson Partnership. The office in Dublin was the 14th office that they'd set up. So I had a bit of a blueprint for setting up an office, and I'd obviously been through that experience with their Perth office and ended up running it. So I knew the process of starting up an office, but what I didn't have was all the gaps that I'd identified when I arrived over there. And one of them was intellectual property in the local market. It had been, I think, 7 years, I think, since I'd recruited in Dublin. So I didn't really know anybody. I didn't know what the market was all about. So the first thing I did was hire two billing managers, both of whom were known to the business. And they provided a lot of the intellectual property initially. And then what we did was we hired some trainees, put them under them, and we just concentrated on billing and training them up. And we focused on that model for the first sort of 3 years or so. And then what naturally evolved was we identified the different parts that each of us were better at. So, you know, one of those managers moved on. Another one, John, has a very strong operational skill set, knew the insurance market, very good at training consultants. And we just made sure that we pushed ourselves towards the areas that we were strongest on.
And when you're taking in those grads, did you do them one at a time or did you take in batches? What does that look like for somebody who's thinking about doing it?
Yeah, we take them in batches of three. Like, I'm always of the opinion that one will be really, really good, one will do okay, and one won't work out. And that's normally how it's been for every time we've taken on three. And we're about to take on another three in the next 4 weeks.
How do you, how quickly can you work out who's going to make it and who's not?
It's tough to tell. You can work out who's going to at least be able to get through a year very quickly. They just have to have, you know, the basic commerciality for it. They have to be hardworking. They have to have a bit of drive. They have to be money motivated. But it's not until probably 9 to 12 months in you get a real, real kick in. You know that curve where, like, you think you start thinking you're terrible at it, then you think you're going to be very, very good, and then it's when that crash comes.
Yeah.
You think, okay, and then like one of your first couple of jobs backs out, you know, an offer gets turned down. Not until you face real, real adversity, which I don't think really comes until like the end of the first year at least.
Your first experience of remote work was going to Cyprus. And speaking to you when you were over there, it felt like you were going through this transformative experience. Like, you were kind of, I suppose you were kind of having that experience in your head that I had in Guatemala all those years ago, where I was like, oh, wait, I can do this from somewhere else. What was that like, explaining that to shareholders, all the rest, and then putting across your vision for Cantalon?
Yeah, it's funny because you told me about remote recruitment 11 years ago, and I told you there was no chance it would ever work.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. Yeah. And now look at it. So yeah. Oh, well, it's just because we were immersed in the Australian market, which is so, you know, based on meeting people and relationship driven and like that. But yeah, so I ended up in Cyprus just purely because it was on the green list. I went over for a brief holiday and then I got taken off the green list. I ended up there for like 3 months. And it was really over there that I found that I could run the business remotely because everyone was remote. Like, I mean, time zone wise, telecommunication wise, everything was fine. And I think it just gave me the idea that a business idea that I'd had previously could now also work. And I'm really fortunate that there's a structure in place now in Erku where it's not just a couple of billing managers and everyone's, you know, just trying to find their feet. Like, our average tenure is about 2.5 years at a consultant level. Our average tenure at director level is 5 years. So I would say that's probably above the industry average. So what you've got is you've got people that are experts in the market, that know what they're doing, that don't need training on a day-to-day basis. They just need to be incentivized, you know, to some extent, you know, kept in line with regards to things like the basics in terms of KPIs, but normally they're self-motivated.
Yeah, I often think that the remote working thing's great and all the rest, but to be able to do that and have a billing management structure in place, it's almost like you have to run that other structure first, like get everybody comfortable in a room, get all of that done, and then maybe you can do what you've done. Otherwise, you might just end up, which is fine if you want that, and just being that principal consultant with a couple of virtual assistants assisting them. So it's interesting that the way it's worked out, you're now ready to do this and you have this structure in place. How will you do it differently with Barbados. How's that going to be for the people that you'll move across? What do you envisage your business to be now moving forward?
Sure. So do you want me to give you some context of the new business? Just so everything else I say makes sense. Okay. So basically the new business Cantillon slogans are life less taxing. So what we're going to do is we're going to internationally relocate people to jurisdictions where they'll pay less income tax. So we're focusing just purely on recruitment for offshore financial centers. So that's in country. But I would say the majority of the work that we'll do will be to relocate people. So we're focusing, if you look at the globe, focusing from the Middle East on places like Bahrain, Abu Dhabi, Dubai. In terms of Europe, it's Gibraltar, Monaco, and the Channel Islands. And then you've got the Caribbean. So you've got places like Bahamas, Cayman Islands, Barbados, as well as Bermuda and BVI. So my thinking here is twofold. One is that we focus mostly on the placement of recently qualified accountants, qualified lawyers, insurance, risk, and tax professionals, as well as people working in wealth management. So a lot of our clients are, you know, top 20 accounting firms, corporate services providers that have offices in these locations. So we believe we have the reach to get the jobs. We also have candidates based predominantly in Ireland and the UK, as well as in our sister companies in Hong Kong and ANZ, that we think have been stuck in a lockdown life for the last 18 months and would just relish the chance to move somewhere new, spend some time in the sun, further their career, and save a lot of money. As you know, like the Irish housing market, the UK housing market, very hard to get a house. Spend 3 years working in the Bahamas and come back with a house deposit. That's our plan.
And let me turn that on you then. So what was your living circumstances in Dublin compared to what you get for your money right now?
Yeah, so I was living in Dublin city centre in an apartment. Again, it's coloured by lockdown life. So the apartment was nice, nothing crazy. But I live in a similar apartment here for almost half the price. I'm in a place called Whole Town in Barbados, which is a nice part of the island.
Yeah. And for anybody that's listening, there's a specific visa that you're able to get if you're an entrepreneur. What is that?
So it's not even based on being an entrepreneur. It's just if you're employed by anybody outside of the island. So it's a visa called the welcome stamp. So it's a 12-month rolling visa where all you have to do is satisfy some really basic criteria. You have to be employed outside of the island and you can work here. It costs a couple of $1,000.
What surprised you about, I was an expat from 22 the whole way through to my early 30s, and I've been in the UK for 5 years, and I am dying, as you know, for that expat experience again. Really, really, really want to experience what we had in Perth. How does the expat community that you're involved in compare to what you've experienced in the past? Can you give us a bit of an insight into it all?
Yeah, so it's the expat community here, it's very different to the experience we had in Australia in some respects, because I think that's maybe more so based on our age. So I think we were kind of like mid-20s back then, whereas here on the welcome stamp, what you'll find is most people living over here that are doing it are probably more so in their 30s, because to be able to do it, you have to be in a senior enough job or at least have enough autonomy from your employer for you to work over here. And you have to be quite responsible to be able to do it, because most people that are doing this are based in UK or Ireland. So we're all getting up at half five in the morning. So everyone here is quite career orientated, but also wants a sense of adventure and generally likes an active lifestyle as well. That's one thing I've really noticed the expat community here. So we all get up around sort of five, half five. We try and finish up around 3, and then we'll invariably meet up for golf, boxing, surfing, running on the beach, something like that. And then if people have to do work in the evening, they tend to do it when it gets dark and then focus again on the next day. So the caliber of person is really good. Everyone's doing something in some way interesting. And as people, they're a lot more interesting as well.
And what's your plan to scale this operation to get it to a point that reflects what you have in Dublin?
Yeah, so we're very much at the start now. We're launching this week and we have a plan to have sort of regional experts. That's my plan. So I want someone who specializes purely in the Middle East. I want somebody who specializes purely in Europe and someone who specializes purely in the Caribbean. And then there'll be a crossover in terms of the disciplines that they recruit in as well. So what we're doing is we're taking over 3 or 4 people from ERCU that are going to come over here. They're going to work from Barbados. Now they will work on a mixture of ERCU work or they can do some count-along work as well. So they're starting to do the groundwork now. So we're going to use the welcome stamp visa for them to come over and work here. So I have an office here. We're going to take on three or four more people, as I mentioned earlier in the call, who are going to essentially replace them in time for January when they come over here. But I would like to take on some people with some intellectual property in the market. Like, I'm at the point now where I'm taking on clients in the Cayman, in Barbados, in Dubai. I have a number of clients across the Channel Islands. And I have a call with a couple in Bermuda this week. So we're increasing our client base. We're officially launching. And once we do, I think that'll increase the candidate base. But we really need people who are really going to focus on this. Like, I think it's a real opportunity for someone to get in at the ground level of a business that I think is going to be really, like, is offering a service and be really sought after.
When you've obviously had some tremendous mentoring over the years. So, like, as you said, it was like the eighth iteration of an office that they had launched in the Walker Anderson partnership. The world's changed. This is very much all on your own back again. What type of things will you do differently this time? Like, what are the big lessons learned from running that gauntlet last time?
Yeah, because it's been an interesting transition. So, like, the ownership structure of Cantillon is the same as Erku. So it's myself, Niall Hamill, and John Ansell. But the office, when I was involved in the office in Perth, I was sort of involved in setting it up. Then the office in Dublin, I was setting it up essentially for a broader business. But this is a whole completely new brand. Yeah. So each one has been a bit of a further learning experience. So what I would do differently would be, I think, identifying the niche as soon as possible. So that's really what we've done. We've identified a really, really specific niche that we're going to service. It doesn't have a huge amount of competitors. And what we're going to do is, I think we're going to focus on a particular type of candidate attraction. So heavy social media, heavy marketing work, utilizing the sort of global candidate base that our sister company has. And now I think also, I'm probably more aware of what I'm good at and bad at, as well as the rest of the team back in Dublin.
What's that?
I think I'm quite confident in winning clients. I think that's one thing that I'm quite strong at. Like, from an Erku perspective and from Cantillon, I think I'm good at identifying who the good ones are through research, winning them, getting them more, getting the jobs on. And then what I'm hoping is that the team is strong enough to then service these jobs, which I do believe they are.
Yeah.
I'm not good from an administrative capacity. I'm not good at getting things done from an operational perspective on time. So that is where John's quite strong.
Yeah.
So we've really identified where what everyone's good at now. So, like, I have to make sure I stick to quite a rigid weekly structure in terms of how much time I spend in Erku, how much time I spend in Cantillon, what John does, what I do.
What's it like being taking an effective step back? And because I know you got to a point, it's done. You were getting a bit like, okay, what's next for me now? You've almost worked your way out of a job, and now you've gone, right, I'm going to do a startup again. I'm going to put it in the structure. I'm going to do all of this, like, running this gauntlet again. What type of things have you had to sharpen in your own skill set again?
It's the discipline, really, because when you've got, like, a few responsibilities, like, I try and still win clients in Erku, obviously still try and manage a number of the team in Erku, still make sure that everything's going well from, like, cash flow perspective, recruitment, PRC, attraction perspective. And then you're trying to build personally in Cantillon. I'm trying to set up the brand for Cantillon. I'm trying to find recruiters for Cantillon. So you're wearing so many different hats. My forte, as you know, is I am awfully ill-disciplined, awfully, to the point where, like, it's an issue. But what I do is I immerse myself in something. So, like, I'll think, okay, I'm going to sort out the marketing for Cantillon. Then I'll spend, like, 5 hours doing that. Or now I'm going to source for candidates. Right, I'm doing 5 hours of doing that. And I get obsessed with it to the point where then I just, you know, I'm not productive in it. So it's discipline's where I'm really trying to work on. In terms of weekly structure.
Yeah. So talk to me about the journey of the guys that are coming over. Did they start with you as grads and now they're getting to do this? What is their career prospects look beyond it? Like, what's your vision for how this pod goes and how it scales with their career and what does it potentially offer them in future?
Yeah, so they have a choice, really. They can further their career in Erku, or they can further it in Cantillon. And I think it's going to be based on which one they have the appetite more to do. Like, I mean, we're still relatively small. At Gerku, only has 13 employees. Each person who's coming over, they've started with us as graduates, and they are the most senior, second most senior person in their niche in Gerku. So therefore, they can continue in that vein and grow a team in that space, or they can get involved in this a startup. The one thing we've noticed actually is that it's very hard to do a bit of both. So at the start, the guys for the last 3 or 4 months, like the guys were doing, like, okay, let's say they're doing 1 or 2 days a week in Cantillon, 3 or 4 days a week in Gerku. It's not working because all of a sudden they get a job on in Gerku and they're like, I've got to service my existing client, as opposed to, you know, calling 10 companies in Bahrain and trying to tell them about Irish accountants, we want to shift over to them.
Andy Hallett calls it the courage of execution. When you go
can
through
you define that?
So he says, like, and another guy spoke to, like, Mike Ames, he's like, you need to burn the boats at some stage. So it's like they're either going to do that business or they're going to do this business. And if they're doing this business, they're wholly focused on it and they build that out and somebody else does that. And I think that's the S3 model. You know, they've been super, super specific. Now, you're in a boutique, slightly different. So it's one of the hardest things, even if you're an independent recruiter, to be able to go, no, I only do this, right?
Yeah, it's very tough. So, like, when I first moved over here, like when I was in quarantine, I set out a template for myself from a monthly and weekly perspective. So it was broken into a council on an Gerku. It was calls with directors, calls with consultants, calls with teams, client work, candidate work on both sides, and then all the ancillary work I had to do to set up. And it is perfect. And I have not been able to stick to it for 1 week. And I've been here for 3 months. Awful. Because those shiny pennies keep presenting themselves, particularly when it's new, right?
Yeah, so
we'll get a bite on a client from the Cayman Islands. And I'm thinking, right, okay, God, I have like probably 4,000 or 5,000 auditors on the system in Dublin. I can now tell them it's the Cayman Islands. So all of a sudden, everything I thought I was doing that week goes out the window, and that's the focus. We got our first job for someone yesterday. There's a lady who's moving from a firm in Limerick to another firm in Limerick who's going to take her over to the Cayman Islands. And I find out today about an offer that I have for a candidate who has been offered a role here with the Big Four in Barbados. That other lady, actually, she had the same offer. She just chose the Cayman. So it's actually getting to the point now where, like, I'm saying to people, right, okay, this is real now. You actually have an official contract to move to Barbados. And then I'm telling them what it's like here. That's a really fun experience, actually. Being able to say, hey, what are you into? And the guy says, I'm into golfing and surfing. And I say, well, I'll have you in 2 WhatsApp groups for that in your first week.
So eating your own dog food has been essential for this.
Yeah, it's like, you know what, I kind of convinced myself I need to move here to live the lifestyle I'm going to represent to candidates. And like, part of that was a massive personal reason as well, but it is actually working. It's definitely working. That's why I hope to actually, like, I'm hoping to live across the other Caribbean islands as well for two or three month periods at a time, like Bahamas, Bermuda, BVI, Cayman, etc. So I can properly represent it.
It sounds like a terrible life. from the south of England here, looking at Littlehampton. So talk to me about money. Not your own, because I know you're a millionaire. talk to me about, like, what type, like, how big a difference is it when you're making tax-free money for consultants that could go and live there? Because I know, like, the Cayman's quite expensive, so it balances to a certain extent. But what's the cost of living like in Barbados versus, like, how much money you could make if you're a consultant and you were to work there for a period of time?
So the big difference is, obviously, you're paying far less tax. So, sorry, you're paying no tax if you're on the welcome stamp visa. So you're in, like, what's called a tax arbitrage, where you're not a resident here, you're not a resident at home. You just have to spend over 6 months of the year outside the country. The UK, I believe it's different, actually. I caught up with one of my mates here from the UK who was saying, I think you have to be out of the UK for at least a month or something. So it's a bit more strict there. But anyway, as soon as you're over here, all of your income is tax-free. So, you know, in Ireland, you're getting taxed at over half at a particular point. So, like, I've had my first few, like, monthly paychecks come through, and it is a significant difference. Even for the people that were getting jobs for here, like, we've got an offer, like I said, for that guy to work with the Big Four here, he'll make actually a similar amount of money that he would do in Dublin, but he'll pay 11% tax as opposed to, like, 30, 35. And obviously in places like the Cayman, it's far less. So it's zero, actually. Cost of living here, some things are actually the same and more expensive. Like, I think property is probably slightly cheaper. Groceries are more expensive here just because everything takes so much longer to get here. But, and you can have as cheap or as expensive life as you want here. Like, that's the really good thing about Barbados. You can have a really nice dinner. Like I had fish and vegetables and salad last night for, I think it was like $15, so like €12, really, really nice. You can also spend $400 on the exact same thing just down the road. Mm. So it really depends. Really depends.
So what does that mean in real terms for numbers? So say if you're a consultant, you go there, like what, like, can you give us an idea on like what's the minimum that somebody needs to get paid to get a welcome stamp? What does that look like? What does that look like then?
Yeah, so it's $50,000 a year to get the welcome stamp. The, like, for example, what we're doing is we're keeping people on their Irish salaries.
Yeah.
And then obviously paying all their commission coming in. Wow. So yeah. So you're gonna be earning a Dublin salary, you'll pay some Dublin prices, but for a lot of things you really won't. You really won't. Like, I mean, the good thing about being getting an uptake
of 30% straight off the bat.
Straight off the bat. And the good thing about here as well is that your lifestyle is a hell of a lot healthier, and which generally means it's a hell of a lot cheaper. Like, you're spending most of your life outdoors here. Sorry, outside of work. Mm. Outdoors is generally a lot cheaper than spending it indoors in restaurants and bars. It's a really good place, by the way, for people's mental health, if anyone is really feeling the lockdown pinch, because like your circadian rhythms are always in check. The sun only ever goes down and comes up within 1 hour all year round. The weather's great. People are positive. The locals are happy. They're really happy to see you because they've been bereft of tourism for like a year. So you're going to be received well.
Do you know what the best news is?
That you're coming over in a couple of months.
I'm coming over next month, or November, actually, in the depths of winter here. So I can't wait. Look, that was great. Good to catch up. Good to see how the project's evolved. We've done like 4 or 5 podcasts now over the years, which, like, if anybody wants to go back and listen to previous ones, you'll see how things have kind of changed and evolved. But definitely this is the MBO that you went through, and the how that has changed things and the outlook and the strategic vision of the company, super interesting. And if anybody's interested in having a chat with Darren, make sure they pay me a fee first.
AmazonSearch.com,
Erky.ie. Fly direct. Okay, all right.
You'll get more money if you don't go through Dilpa. Hey, wait a second. Just explain how the employment would work, okay, for anybody who does actually send Dilpa to their CV, who sends it on to me. So we're looking for recruiters in Dublin for the Irish market and for Cantillon as well, right? Now, what we're looking to do is you would be employed through our Irish entity, okay, and you can work in Dublin or in Barbados on Irish roles as well. So if you're an Irish recruiter who's working the local market but wants to live in the sun and wants to earn a good commission split and live over here, then get in touch with me. And if you're from the UK or America or anywhere else, we can employ you to the Irish entity and have you work and live over here.
All right.
Good man. You're a good man.
Till next time.